Hello and welcome to Matt's Truck and Grip Podcast. Matt Ireland hosts them once again. Today I am joined by a friend of a friend, basically. My good friend Ian suggested I speak to this young chap, and so made contact and here we are to talk. So let me introduce you to Zach Moore. Zach, how are you?
Yeah, very good, Matt.
Jolly good. Nice to speak to you. We've been chatting sort of via WhatsApp for a little while now, and I think you've got quite an interesting story that people like to hear. But before we get into that bit, we'll take it right back to the beginning. How did you get involved in the world of transport? Was it, did you have family working in it, or just an interest in childhood and in trucks, or where did it come from?
Well, because it's my father. He drove, like, you know, in the 70s, started driving. So obviously I was young when you get to school, the school holidays. Yeah. Where was I going? In the truck with him, having a look around the country.
You're going to the passenger seat. Yeah. So was it just UK work you did, or did you do continental?
Yeah, UK.
Yeah.
Cars transport at Melton in Suffolk.
Really? W. Carter Haulage.
Yeah, that's
very well known.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
70.
Well, I wrote the life story of Bob Carter, who was one of the brothers.
Yeah.
Which you probably wouldn't have known. So, yeah.
Yeah, Colin.
Yeah.
I think I remember name Colin.
Edward, yeah. Colin, Edward and Leslie. It was the CEL group. So I take it he was doing containers then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly?
Yeah, mostly containers, Felixstowe before. I can remember all the little roads going through to Felixstowe, all through Marlsham, sort of Brightwell. That was, and then they put in the as well.
Yeah, Brightwell Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was your dad driving? Did he have a multitude of trucks there, or was it?
Yeah, I didn't used to go with him a lot when he had the ERS, because there's not a lot of comfort in any of those. I think it must have been about 1976 time they got the Evercos.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so. They were like, you know, wow motor then, you know. So then I used to go with the double bunk. So
yeah, the Fiat, they had quite a lot of Fiats, didn't they? With a pretty big cab.
Yeah, that was it. So then I'd go a lot more with him then, you know. Just all over the country, you know, down in London, nights out down near Tower Bridge in London, I think it would have been.
In the truck park there, yeah.
Yeah, and have a look around. And Grantham, I've got a lot of fond memories of Grantham. Buying, getting jackets, bought me off floats in bands and things like that, you know. Wrestlers.
Yeah.
Which is quite amusing because you see them on telly and you think, they don't like each other. And they're in the services, a lot of them. I'd go, ask Manners or Big Daddy or something like that, and they're in these services.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah.
Having your mind blown.
Yeah. And watching a little black and white television. That was it. But there wasn't no comfort, really. To be fair. So that was, like everybody, I think, just earning money to make a living, and you know, way most of and then off again, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hard life.
Yes, it was. But at the time, like, there wasn't anything, you know, spectacularly better than anything else, was there? So the Iveco or the Fiat cab was a pretty big cab, you know, especially in comparison with a lot of the others. And so it's quite luxurious, really, especially having two bunks. That was quite a treat, not especially not having to sleep across the seats in a day cab.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, sunbeds, I think, where my dad used to use it a sunbed and lay it out across the seat. So, you know, pretty sure.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, certainly not the best, was it? But we've definitely come a long way since then, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. There's a definite change in the cab. And I think now they're putting toilets in them, which... I believe my mum wrote Mercedes-Benz a letter because she was rather upset a couple of years ago that the problem with lorry drivers and having to, you know, there's nowhere to really stop anywhere. So she said,
why
haven't they got toilets in the caravan, like a caravan sort of thing, you know? And I said, I don't really know. That's probably a good idea. She wrote them a letter Peggy Benz or some, you know, random thing, what she would do. And I think now, I did see something a few months ago that some of these lorries have now got sort of like port-a-lees in them.
Toilets. Yeah, I've seen a there's a German company offering it as a conversion on a Mercedes. Yeah. That's about all I know at the moment. So I can't imagine any of the manufacturers will ever offer it as an optional extra. But again, it's a why has it never been done? Because it just makes perfect sense, doesn't it, really? There's the argument of, you know, having it in the cab and, you know, sort of going to the toilet where you eat kind of thing. But it's a necessary, it's needed, especially in the UK. It's not quite so bad in Europe, but it's certainly something we could do with, really. Yeah, so whether it takes off, whether it takes off or not, I don't know. But it's definitely better than going in a small bottle and then hiding them behind your seat.
Exactly. Yeah.
And things like
advanced nowadays with the, I've seen them these small sort of toys. You know, they've got a bag in them. I think they wraps it up. You know, they're all, you know, pretty much on the ball these days with all that sort of thing. So, and like you say, it's better than if you get caught short somewhere. Do any cab than outside or falling into a ditch with a bucket, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. And there's more and more things on social media and whatnot with like local councils clamping down on drivers going to the toilet in hedges and things like that, which I do get. I get both sides of the argument because there is nowhere to go, but also going on tarmac and concrete does make it stink and it's not particularly nice and people don't clean up after themselves, so it's a very difficult one to judge, really. So having that option and just removing and removing the fact that you might get a fine for going is win-win, really, isn't it? It'll potentially pay for itself, so to speak.
I think there was some old law that goes back to horse-drawn carriages that the driver, and I think it was in a highway code or something, that the driver of vehicle could pee on his wheel. As long as he was peeing on his wheel, he was allowed to do that.
I think there was, but I think it's since been repealed and it's not part of... I think. I need to have a little check-up on that, but I've got a feeling they've got rid of it. But, you know, it's, sounds about blooming right, doesn't it? I mean, we've digressed a little bit here, but it's always good. So when you left school... you obviously couldn't go and drive a truck straight away. What sort of path did you take from school?
Cycled around every garage in my area trying to get an apprenticeship for mechanic, sort of being that at my interest then. Had a little bit of luck, as in I got a job, but that was on one of those yacht schemes. I think it's £25 a week, and I was working 8 till 6 at night. Like I say, that didn't last long because 25 quid a week isn't a lot of good.
No.
I think I'd been on a potato machine for £63 a week from 9 till 3 and then went down to 25. And then I was learning to be, obviously had must be moped and things like that. So you need a bit of money there, you know. So I then went to a DIY for 2.5 years. Bike license, car license, done that. And then went to the local authority on rubbish, on the dust carts, special collections. And that's where I got me Class 2 with them.
Yes.
And I did anything there, you know, for 4 years.
Did you enjoy doing the dust cart work? Because I've never actually really... My younger brother did it for a while and he quite enjoyed it. There's got to be a lot of interesting sights, I'd say, on that sort of thing.
Well, when I started on there, they'd gone into the black bin bags, you know.
Yeah, so it wasn't loose.
The households had them, but you've got people wintertime hillbillies putting ash and things into their black plastic bag, and you got to pick it up and it will just stretch, you know, nearly have it over, you know, and put it lightly. Or I've even had, I think in the pubs and hotels we used to go to, they still had the cast sort of bins, really heavy. Yeah. I don't know what the hell they were made of, but they were heavy. and then they're loaded. And I went over one day because I chugged on my shoulder and then caught a washing line with it, you know, so that all ended in a disaster. but that'll keep you fit. I go through a pair of boots, as I'm sure your brother did, probably about probably month and a half. Yeah. You'd go through a pair of boots, you'd wear them out.
Yeah, it's just so much walking and picking. I suppose a lot of the manual labour's been taken out of it nowadays with wheelie bins and lifting up. So, you've still got to drag a potentially fairly heavy wheelie bin. And I know people that I know have put things like bricks and whatnot into their black bin. So something like that's going to weigh a lot. But, it's got to be and I presume as well this is a time before recycling and whatnot, so it's just everything just went in the bin. So
everything went in the bin, and we took it to a landfill, which was an old quarry that had been dug out, and then you're just put emptying the vehicle just in the quarry, and then they went over it with a Hanamag, dozer with spiky wheels, you know.
Yeah, like the steel roller type things.
That's right. Got me brought. Then, in that day, I could go up there and I knew all the guys there, obviously. They'd have me drive it and run about.
Oh, really?
Scrapers, all sorts, you know. And that was wonderful, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
Drive anything, messing about.
Fantastic, yeah.
But, yeah, we used to get up to some tricks with the driver. Or if I weren't driving, I'd be relief on anything. Driver, come load up. And we used to get Coke bottles and things like that, plastic ones, and just put them in the back. So when you press to get it to cycle into the dust cart, that hit the back and might have bang, or that would pop out, you know, down the road sort of thing, you know, far around the back. That was good. Like I say, we used to do job and finish.
Yeah.
So that encouraged you to be on
get
the
a move on. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then I think they did change it and wanted you to do more work and that sort of thing. And I thought, no, I've had enough of this. So I then transfer over to the sewage side on the tank.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So got into that, really.
Was that still class two or?
Yeah, class two, yeah. I got my dad a job there at the council because he was for that stage, he was doing trailer fitting, agricultural trailers, fitting hydraulics to them, that sort of thing. And I thought that'd be better. He'd be better off where on the tankers, and he did like it, but unfortunately he died. He was 48.
Oh, really?
And so then I transferred over and sort of took over his lorry, really, you know. And did that for a few years with them, and they then changed to a private company. I wasn't going. I had to stay because of septic tanks at houses. So I sort of had enough of them, really. But then that's about 9 years I've done with them.
Yeah.
Then I went off to see another local guy, Turners, AA Turners.
Right, okay. Whereabouts were they?
Miles from sort of
are they okay? Yeah,
but that's only a one man, two, you know, one man sort of thing. It's me and the boss, you know,
right? Yeah, yeah,
and his wife. And I worked for him for 28 years.
Crikey, so what was that doing?
Emptying tanks, and working on the with angling water.
Yes,
on their sites doing
that name.
That.
They have grey Volvos.
Yeah, did have. Yeah, well, when I started there,
with the name and like a banner, a semicircular,
right. Red.
Yes, in red. Yeah, I remember them being about now. Right, okay.
Yeah, there's only he did. I think his father started that with in. Actually, with Binder, you've heard from Master Heard of Binder.
Yeah, Binder Group,
Very big now.
Yes.
Charlie Binder and all that. His father started that business the same time as Terry, my boss, his father, I don't know what his name was, started his business. So they've been going virtually the same amount of time. And that's the sort of 60 odd years that they've sold out. he sold the business. I'd done 27 years, and he wanted to sell it then. But that's still, I think it still runs on the name of Turner.
Right.
But they call it Tanker and Turner's Tanker and Services now, I think, at Colchester. But I declined the offer to go and work with them.
Right, okay, fair enough.
So, in my way, they did that.
In a polite way.
Yeah, I'm always polite-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, very polite. But yeah, I had a lot of years working on my own, using my initiative and running them trucks.
I guess it was a lot, like every day was different really as well, even though it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was all, so it must have been plenty of variety to keep you interested, especially if you lasted that long at it.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was hard work, hence why I haven't got a lot of fat on me.
Yes.
You just never stop, you know. Yeah. And my philosophy was, as soon as I get done, I can get out of here, you know. So I did, you get to know. The thing I liked about it was you get to know your customer.
Yeah.
I'm not very good with names, Bill, George.
Yeah.
Matt.
I've been called far worse.
You say no more, haven't we all?
Yeah.
But I can always remember what their children were doing or their wives or something like that. So you'd always catch up each year, because there's usually a yearly visit, sometimes more, sometimes less, that'd be 5 years later,
Yeah.
So that was good. I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
And like I say, that Jonathan, I'm glad that did finish. He was selling that. But he was, I was just doing this thing called Tubi. Don't really have a lot of faith in any of that. I don't like that idea.
No, fair enough.
So I left and then I put myself through my car. And that was actually, I'd known you were talking about Ian.
Yes.
A friend of mine. I'd met him at Parham. He looked after a site there.
Yes.
Composting.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I used to go in there and do a tank. So we got talking because of we're into motorcycles, that sort of, very passionate. So then I left Mr. Turner. He sold his business. And I then put myself through my cast one. Thought I'd do that. And then
Can I ask, how old were you then at that point, roughly? So you're in your
40s? Oh, no, older than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was 2017.
Okay. So quite recent then.
Yeah, yeah. 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 I think it was 2018. Yeah, because I thought, to be fair, Matt, where I used to see my dad lived in that in these lorries years ago, and I thought, who the hell wants to do that? I liked driving and enjoyed driving trucks, but I didn't want to live in a truck.
Live in one, no. There's a lot to be said about sleeping in your own bed at home. There really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I was always in the garage messing about motorbikes. So if I was away from that and that space, that would, that wasn't no good for me.
Yeah.
But I thought when I left them, I thought I'll put myself through, get the cast one because I need to go and do something else. And
it just opens up options, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we've all got to earn money and survive.
That's it. And where we are and around this area, there's not a huge amount of sort of class two or category C work, is there? Because we're in a rural area, a lot more of it is C and E, isn't it? So just having them up as a wise move, really.
Yeah, so my passion is still in lorries. I like doing it and thought, well, I should have done that years ago. But I thought, well, age is just a number, isn't it? So I just and that was a really good company, Ipswich, blimey. I can't think of the name of them now, up near the sewage works. I watched the possum going down to Cliff Key. Family concern. Oh, why can't I think of their name?
Hamilton's. Is it Hamilton's in orange trucks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hamilton's.
Yes. Yes. Nice family. I turned up there. I think the Monday I finished with Turner, went down to the job centre. They were absolutely useless. didn't like them at all then there. Never needed them. Never will.
Yeah.
You know, and they went down there, and the young lady, I think it's the daughter, they're a family business.
Yeah, they are. I think it's Walter Hamilton, because I still do occasionally drive a training, but I do it for a company out of Norwich now. So, okay. I did for a while. I'm not going to mention the name of the company that I used to work for, because there's a lot of reasons not to. But need to say, I've done quite a lot of training around Ipswich, and I know a few of the guys from Hamilton's, and I think it's Walter or Wally Hamilton. Yeah, and I'm sure it's his daughter and his son, because they've also got a place in King's Lynn.
They had, yes. And I think Norwich. I think
I can't remember seeing any around Norwich. I don't think they do. No, but yeah, quite a large company. Yeah,
yeah,
but,
yeah. And they were good.
But still family. Yeah,
yeah, and they were helpful. You know, they were quick as well. Because I must have got in the right time, because I think that was a Monday. Wednesday, I went out for an assessment. 4 half days, then my test. You know, and the following week, I was doing that and passed on the Friday.
Brilliant.
So, and then on the Monday, I started with John Ho.
John Howe?
Howe, that's it.
Howie.
Yeah. He gave me a job through, I think, because, you know, Ian. And, he I was sort of spoken to him. And so I was on the P's, on the pre-truck for a little while.
Yeah. I've done the peas. I love the pea harvest.
That smells gorgeous, doesn't it? I love it.
And it's just, well, and I like the sitting about the lay-by doing nothing part as well. although one day I did for John, I sat, there's a big lay-by at Saxmundham, and at the time I lived in Saxmundham, and he said, right, go and park and wait, you know, we'll give you the call when it's time to go down to the farm. And I thought, shall I pop home? I was like, the moment I walk through my door, I'm going to be going back to the truck, aren't I? So I'll just go and sit in the lay-by. And I sat in that lay-by 8 hours.
Really?
8 hours. Yeah, about a mile from my house, I sat in that lay-by 8 hours waiting to go down in towards Eigen, just because that's the nature of the pea harvest, isn't it? Sometimes it's really quick. Other times it's just you sit about waiting. And then it took that long. The night guy I was sharing a truck with, my mate Rob, by the time I got the call, I gave him a shout to say, right, I'm going down because my time's getting on, because I'd already tipped at Alton Broad, just run down. Right. I met him at Alton Broad in the morning, like 6 o'clock in the morning, down the lay-by. I phoned and said, right, I'm now going down a load, so I'll meet you on the way back up. And it took that long. By the time I got to Eigen, he pulled up in his car. So all I'd done that day was tip Alton Broad, sit in the lay-by, down to Eigen. He pulled up in his car. I took his car home, and he started his night shift. It's just,
that's a bit crazy. You know, it's just hotbed, isn't it? You know, he's done that. I did that a few times where I'd meet him because I had to do something, go get my daughter, do something with her, and he'd met me on the slip road at Wicker Market. You know, so I could take his truck. But that's just like a village running around. That's like the circus running around for a month or two.
It really is, and it's just full on, is it? Because it is 24/7, just whoever you can find to cover a 12-hour shift if you can, and I do certainly enjoy it. So it's good fun.
The smell is better than shit.
That's true.
I like the smell of the peas.
Much more pleasing on the nose.
So I did that, and then got the opportunity. A mate of mine worked at All Well Trucks.
Yes.
And Mercedes miles from here. And he offered me gave me an opportunity to go and work there. And I thought, oh, this is good because I'm really into, you know, like engines, truck, you know, that sort of thing. So I was messing about with them.
Yeah.
So I thought, that sounds like a good idea. It sounds a bit more chilled, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
So went down there, and I've been there ever since. That's nearly 9 years now.
Crikey. Yeah. So what does the job involve, you're doing now then?
Well, I
a bit of anything.
I do anything, you know. You just get many tasks that you just do, but that's basically picking the MOTs, trucks up, bringing them back, service, trucks to bring back, taking them back, may go and get some parts if they're stuck for somebody to do that, and looking after the workshop, you know, making sure it's clean and tidy, and just not running it, but just using your common sense to keep things tidy, you know, that sort of thing. So I really enjoy that, you know, and that's a bit easier on your body.
Yes.
You know, I tend to find lifting things with forklifts is better.
And easier, definitely. Yeah. Especially as we enhance in years. I think that's a way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll get wiser if you get older, otherwise.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, work smarter, not harder.
That's the one. I knew there was a saying for somewhere, but it's like, forklifts are designed for lifting. That bugger will lift anything.
Absolutely.
I, on the other hand, doesn't want to.
No, I've served my time with the bins doing that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Pumping pipes about, you know, that's an army exercise in itself. That is getting them off and dragging them. I wish they're all just one pipe away.
Yeah.
I've been there ever since, really.
Brilliant. And you still get the drive trucks occasionally.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Not many with the trailers on, but we have our test trailer, which we have. I take that out. Well, for MOTs, obviously, we need that. Yeah. And I do take it out just to hear the mechanic's sort of done some work and needs the truck testing with weight on it, you know, just to see if everything's all right with it, really, before it goes back to the customer.
Yep.
So sort of run, and that's a good variety, you know. Obviously new to older stuff trucks, you know, like that. The new one they've got.
So have you? So being with Mercedes there, have you had the opportunity to drive the electric Actros yet, or not? Because there's not many.
Yeah, I'll prove that.
What do you think of them?
I don't like electrics for a start.
Fair enough.
I don't see the point of that. You know, that
when I mean,
for an example, if I'm doing the MOTs and I put the diesel 500 horsepower truck, you know, put the test emissions, the exhaust, put a sensor in it, I'm looking at what, 0.026 of milligrams or whatever the measurement is in that. It's coming out. If I turn around and put a hose pipe on that exhaust and put it in the cap, I'm not going to die.
No.
You know what I mean? So why do they keep saying diesel is so bad? You know, older ones. I remember when I used to drive trucks years ago, and the blues, the fumes.
Plumes.
Yeah, honestly, that wasn't good. And you know, so now it's a lot better, obviously, because you know you're going to be fine.
Yeah,
but they all go okay. The electric, you know, they're very quiet.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, because the only electric truck I've driven other than years ago, I had a test drive in a hybrid, was the electric Actros, and I was shocked at just how quick it was.
Yeah.
Off the mark. That was good fun. It was only off-road, but, the chap from Mercedes-Benz in Northern Ireland, because I was at a show over there, he's like, go on, put your foot down. I was like, all right. And it just, we just lost the Vito that come to pick us up. Yeah, it was,
up to 56 mile an hour.
Up to 56, yeah, absolutely.
It's a brick wall, isn't it? But, you know, they do go, I think they've done 600, 700 miles to a charge.
Hmm.
Something like that, I think batteries that they tend to deplete in winter time with a load on, you know, all that sort of thing. That's the ideal situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, without the radio on.
I think so.
I mean, I think because I'm quite interested by it all and the alternative fuels and how everything's going to evolve, because it's whether we like it or not, it will evolve, and that'll be sort of like customer driven, won't it, rather than the driver. But to me, like your likes of, let's just say, Lombard Shipping in Ipswich, because we know them, do the pallet network stuff. Like an electric truck for them is ideal, because it's not going far, is it? So you can just charge it up in the yard, Potter about delivering your pallets around Ipswich and Stowe Market. Back at the end of the day, put it on charge, job done. And that's good for stuff like that. But the longer stuff, we haven't got the infrastructure as yet. Whether we will ever get it, I don't know. That's an argument for another day, I guess. But yeah, it intrigues me, the whole system.
I've been in the Lombards and seen there's a couple of trucks there, them Volvos, and the fan, because of the heat, obviously, when they're plugged in, them fans, they go, ooh, to cool there, you know, because I'm going in there about 7 o'clock at night to pick up the truck to go back. For a 6 weekly or something like that, you know, although they're mostly gone to getting Volvos now.
Fair enough.
I saw them popping and pick them up, and all you can hear is just
on a diesel generator, probably.
Yes, I didn't want to say that.
We'll leave that bit out.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm not convinced by it.
No,
every electric thing.
I don't think it will take over. I think there will always be a place for diesel just because it's so efficient and it's so common.
Mm.
But I think various other methods will come along and they might end up being a kind of viable alternative, but I think diesel will be here for certainly till I retire, I would say. I would have thought, but who knows? You can't predict the future, I guess, can you?
No. They put the finger in to dabble about with things, don't they? And tell you it's a good idea and this is that, and that's such a bad idea, the diesel. But I don't get that. That's advanced as well. The diesel engine is advanced, you know, and we're still got them, haven't we? But like I say, we've got to be in infrastructure.
Yeah.
To like anything, haven't you?
That's it. Yeah. This episode of Matt's Truck and Grep podcast is proudly sponsored by Creasy Drainage. If you're dealing with blocked drains, flooding, or drainage problems, Creasy Drainage is a team to call. They provide professional drainage services for homes and businesses, including drain unblocking, repairs, septic tank emptying, and CCTV drainage surveys. They're known for fast response times, honest advice, and getting the job done right the first time. For reliable drainage services you can trust, check out Creasy Drainage. The details will be in the show notes.
But yeah, they're all, you know, that's like so. Everything advances. And as we did from steam engines to everything else, you know.
Yeah,
nuclear powered next, you know.
Ironically, I think we kind of went from steam to electric at the start, didn't we? Before the internal combustion engine, we had it right at the beginning. Mm. So
I did nick a electric milk float when I did it 8 or 9, and so that was then. That was 70s, 74.
Was that the Unigate dairy machine? Was it?
I don't know who the company was, but I thought I can drive that. crashed into a gate down the estate, but that was electric. Huge, huge battles on that. You know, just get in there, put your foot, dunk, away
away. Off you go.
And I can have a clue. Apart from crash. So,
at least it would have been low speed.
Yeah. but when you're that young, everything is fast, isn't it?
That's true.
Once you get used to it, you know. I was a bit bad like that.
Yeah, fair enough. We shan't go into too much more of that then.
No.
So I also believe you do a bit of an interesting sideline through someone you've met at Orwell. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. We got to go because I think where I work, that was Orwell Trucks. Then it went to was it Premier or something like that? And then it's been Motus, South African. And then last year that was bought up the East Coast by Saga.
Saga, that's right, yeah.
Prem.
Yeah.
Big company. So the daughter came over with some other people to introduce themselves to us all.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, well, actually, I've done my homework a bit and realised that Roland Chabon races in the Paris-Dakar. He's a Paris-Dakar racer. And that's a passion of mine since since
you can remember
20, 30 years, you know, since you could first see it on the television sort of thing randomly on at night, you know. So I've always followed it because of the trucks, motorbikes, and that just was,
it's got everything, hasn't it?
These blokes and women are just amazing what they where they had to go and what they had to do, you know, for a month. So I thought, this guy does that. So his door was there. So I basically didn't have any questions. And I think the only question was me going, all right. do you think there's any chance I could get on the Dakar
team? Yeah.
Your dad, good dad, he raced. And she smiled, Aaliyah, that was, and said, maybe we'll see. So I thought,
yeah.
And then I think it was a month later that they had a big, their main introduction to take us over was at Witten, on the place there. So we had some food and that sort of thing, you know. So that, and that Ronan was there with his wife and there. So I thought, well, I need to speak to this man about the Dakar, you know. And luckily, he sort of walked near me, so I attached myself to him and talking to the dad. He speaks English, not a huge amount, you know, like me and my friends, you know.
Yeah.
So he was showing me, very nice man, he's showing me pictures on his phone. The year before, they were racing, and he'd knocked the front wheel, caught a rock, some, you know, in there, just as the helicopter was coming over film.
So
great, and a brilliant moment, you know.
Yeah.
So they had to sort that out. But and then I said to him, asked him, you know, is there any chance I could get on the team? And he looked at me and smiled and said, well, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
And that was in the May.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, most people would say, you know, that ain't going to happen.
No, that's it. Yeah.
No. I'm putting that politely. Most people say to me. And that's I'm a great believer. Well, I'm going to ask, you know, because...
If you don't ask, you don't get. It's as simple as that, isn't it?
And that is bloody right, you know.
Yeah.
So then in December, Anne, his wife popped over and I got called in the office. I think most people thought I was getting sacked or something, maybe, or I'd done something wrong. But she turned up and said, you better get a suitcase, if you haven't got one, because you're going to the Dakar. And I was literally like, couldn't believe it. So then I went, I did pop over to France to meet Roland again. And then, like I said, in December, I flew out to Paris. And then the next day over to Saudi to end up in Yanbu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For a month. Well, you know, and traveled around with it. But that was was a crazy experience. There's nothing, I don't think it's not a lot prepares you for it. You know, it's not a holiday. You know?
No, definitely not.
I knew it wasn't going to be a holiday, but I didn't know anything about the workings of a, you know, like an F1 race team, which is what they're equivalent to in, you know, the desert and what that entails. You know, you have a rough idea. You've got to move everything. You've got to, you know, but until you get there.
You don't know, do you?
No.
So what was your role? What was your role in it all then?
I was going to be a support driver.
Mm-hmm.
So I did drive a couple of the trucks. They were MAN.
Yep.
Of Ridges. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen an overhang on the back of a truck that long before. Honestly, I was like, I looked at it and thought, well, is this all right? You know? Because these things are all full of supplies, obviously, for that race, you know, the Dakar sort of thing. You've got to have everything.
They got
One of the team we were in, that's Gazoo Toyota, and they got four brand new cars, which are 5 months old. And then my boss, Ronan, he's got his car, another Toyota, and another guy there, you know, so six of these cars, and they've all got their mechanics, three mechanics to a car, And then every other specialist you can imagine to do with gearboxes, they strip everything, their motors, everything, every night, you know, they come in. So but I sort of got there, looked out and thought, all these people know exactly what they're doing.
Yep.
I was like, well, what am I going to do? Oh, I can go and empty a bin.
Yeah.
Around, emptying the bins, keeping things tidy. And then just really trying to get in to be part of the team, I think, you know, to be not useless. I want them, you know, if somebody's giving me an opportunity, I want to make them proud.
Make an impression, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, to show that I'm not, you know.
Not thinking you're on a jolly and you're here to work. Yeah.
You just can't do that, Matt. Honestly, that's crazy. For a month, you know, obviously my boss is there, he's racing. But yeah, I just, you live in a tent, you know, and there's no sleep really. And I think you begin to understand, well, you wonder how people sleep in wars, you know, but that you're in the pits beside everything, trucks, obviously there's trucks, cars, and nothing stops. You know, there's no quiet area, you know, there's people tearing up and down. And I think, what is it? The last thing they put on them cars at night is the I can't think, but that's aluminium or steel under tray to protect the other side of it. Well, before they're doing that, they're thrashing it with a sledgehammer, straightening it out. Everybody's testing, you know, running up beside you. You know, you're like, you're only 10 feet from the main, from where the mechanics are working, and they'll be working most of the night to get that everything prepped to get them out the next day.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about, you know.
Yeah. So when you're driving the truck, if the truck's four-wheel drive as well, were you actually driving on desert, or was it just tarmac?
That was mostly the trucks, they're tarmac, apart from the odd little bit, you know, but you're just running the road doing. You'd have a meeting at, so we say, 8 or 9 o'clock at night. You're told what you're doing for the next day or next 2 days, what's happening. So, and that is like military. That's like, you are moving out of here and you've got to be gone by 3 o'clock in the morning. Everything's got to be packed, done, and ready to go, because you've got to do 700-800 kilometers. And then you get there and have to set everything up.
Yeah.
You know, that, again, that's like a bit like that, bit like it, but not like it, like the P. village, you know, all they're moving around side to side, but everything's got to go with you because that's all you've got, you know. We just get like, we've got to be, everything's got to be done, packed. We were doing a canteen. You put like a canteen up, in our area, you know, what you're assigned. Mm-hmm. Everything has to be parked a certain position, you know, and everything that is just all very much military. And I think it took us about two hours to put this up all together. And we'd got it down to, after a day or two of working it all out and then putting numbers on everything so that we could slot it in to down within an hour, you know.
Right.
Sort of we didn't know that, but the guy who's in charge of everything to do with the site and the running and the moving, he was watching us and tying him yet. You know, you don't know that. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
But then you're on the move. So I'd either have the truck, and they run a thing called the trippy. This sort of sat nav thing.
Oh, the reel of paper type thing that with the directions on.
That isn't, but it's a new one. And that thing, I was like, what the hell is that? Do you know what
I mean?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's simple. When it's like everything, Matt, when you know, it's all simple, isn't it?
It's dead easy. Yeah.
Work that out. What are the fuel stations? Darn it, just goes left, right, you know, or whatever it is. So, I don't think they're run all the lorries over there. There's a lot of mercs about running about there.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the race, but, you know.
Yeah. In general, thing.
And they don't run tacos or nothing, you know. No. They just pull up on the side of the road, off the desert. They'll just run off, you know, and just stop. So that's a bit hillbilly out there. And one day we're going along, and I'm I'm driving this MAN, and that's high, so you're obviously a bit wary with the old roads. Mm-hmm. And I'll look out the side window, and there's two camels at the same height as me in this truck. And you're like, what the heck? This bloke has got a pickup truck, and he's got two camels in it. Just
in the back.
Yeah, just going down the road, they're doing about 60 or 70 come past you, you know. And these camels are just blinking. You can see their eyelashes. You know, that did abuse me.
They're thinking, I wish I had a pair of goggles on.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just kneel. I must get them in there and tuck the knee, tuck them on, you know, just put them in. But they'll get two in a pickup and about four in a canter.
Wow.
Running about, you know.
Flipping egg.
All over the place. Camels in the back of trucks,
unreal. So what roughly was the race route then? Because obviously, originally it was Paris Dakar, but it's not that now. You start in Saudi Arabia. Is it just internally in Saudi, or does it go across the borders?
All just Saudi.
So just in Saudi.
In Yanbu.
Yeah.
Yanbu, and then you're up to like Alula, Hail. The capital, Riyadh. The capital, and then loop back round again to finish sort of in Yanbu,
right?
You know, so you're sort of doing a big sort of loop around. Sort of thing. Like I say, six. I think the longest we stayed on was Yanbu at the beginning, because they do like a pre-testing and to get your positioning sort of thing before you then go out. So you're sort of 3 days there, and then that's, you're just on the move continuously.
Yeah,
you know, you might have a day somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's all set up, the canteens and things. Each sort of sky city you go to, that part mm-hmm. is already set up, so you go in and you're allocated, this is your area. So then we park everything up how it's supposed mm-hmm. to be, and then set up camp.
Yeah.
Because you're waiting for the cars to come in.
Yeah, off the desert.
They've got to come in, because that is the crucial thing that you realise is that they are all, well, which they would be, they want to win. So you have to be there when they say, and set up, waiting for that the driver to come in, and the co-driver, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, that is just all encompassing about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see more like that. But they do everything there. They strip them. All them cars are stripped, put back together and race. So not the trucks, we had a truck, and that was an Iveco. Do you call them Ivecos?
I call them, but I'm not sure what the actual connect.
Iveco, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we had one of those with our team, which is Overdrive, and this is that's a desert racer.
Yeah.
And they're in the race. You have them in the race because they're support in the desert, all the drivers.
Right, okay.
So there's three on there on that truck. Great blokes from Holland, you know. And an English guy who was on there as a co-driver.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. They were loaded up and they would run in the race with the trucks, you know. And if one of the cars got in a difficulty or needed some spares or some help, they would then find them in the desert to then assist them.
Yeah. That must be an intense job.
Oh, God, yeah. I went out one day on a pit to go to the actual, because they'd have a pit in the desert. This is sort of a newish thing.
So right, okay.
McPag, young guy, Aaron from says Holland. We went out in a pickup and we'd loaded it with spare wheels and tires.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, we did take a truck one as well. We just stacked this pickup up and left about, I don't know, 3 a.m, something like that, 4 a.m, because we got to a certain junction and we were going to turn right on the trippy to do 200 kilometers sort of to the right, and everybody else is doing the 500 kilometers to the left. So we had to go into the desert where the pit stop was to drop these wheels now. And that was brilliant to do that, because you get a bit stir crazy being in the pits and doing all that sort of thing all the time. So a nice sort of run out.
Yeah, refreshing change.
Yeah, just to see a different perspective of the race, because there's no, as you imagine, there's no real track you can see, because they're running across the desert.
Yeah.
In the vehicles. But we got out there and they come in, because there is a dial in those cars, and that is quite an old school sort of dial, which you flick as you hit the pits. You have to flick that, and they're running them flat out nearly, and that's going, the engine sort of thing, and it's doing like 20 mile an hour, because you'll get a fine. There's radar for all this sort of thing, mm-hmm. And one of our guys come in into the pits, and as soon as he hit that road, he opened his driver's door, threw it open, and that's a signal for I've got a problem with the car. Before he even gets to the mechanics,
mm-hmm.
And that turned out he had the power steering pump had failed.
Oh,
and that
just,
that took him.
I was gonna say, it's just what you want in the sand.
all that messing about. But that took him, what was it, 7 minutes, and they changed that, and he was away again. But in that race. That's so much time to lose,
That's a huge amount, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. They jump on it and they change it, swap it out, and that's, and they're away within 6-7 minutes. But that's, they've lost probably 3 or 4 positions.
Yes.
So that was good to do that. And then we then had to wait for the truck to come in, and he turned up 2 hours later. After all that, they've all finished and people are packing up to go back down the road to the other side where we were supposed to go another 700 kilometers to get there. We waited another couple of hours for the truck to come in, because he'd got a puncture in the desert, because the mechanic sussed out that he'd been stationary in the desert for half an hour. So he said he's got a puncture or something, and that's what they had. So they came into the pits because we took the other spare wheel for them. We unloaded that, and they got out of that cab, and they're covered in dust and crap and all sorts, and that's not particularly cold environment.
No.
And then you're trying to get the old one off, load the new one so they can then get gone, to get to their sort of finish thing, as well as assist any of the other teams.
Yeah.
And to team on the way to their journey,
Yeah.
But that did make me laugh, because the driver, he of that truck, I said, is it all right if I get in the truck,
Yeah.
Yes, Zach, no problem. You help yourself. So it took me about a day, I think.
Yeah.
To then decide to get in around the corner, and he was laughing. He was going, "Zach, it take you that long to get in the bleep 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 truck," and that did make me laugh. I had to cable ties and all that sort of thing strapped inside there in the roll cages, and that did make me smile. Duct tape and cable ties. Brilliant.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, that must be a hell of a machine as well, just to take on that desert and just, repair if you have to. And wow. I can imagine what the noise is like in there as well, because I dare say it's not got all the creature comforts and padding and whatnot that we're used to as usual.
That's it. Yeah. No, they just got their race seats and a roll cage, and that is all bare minimum. Everything else is not needed, really.
That's an extra weight you don't want to be carrying about.
Mm. Yeah, you're right, yeah. Yeah, but that was a 2014, that truck.
Okay. So
they've done a few good truck, that comes in, they're changing the axle oils, gearbox, engine oils, everything filters, everything's got to be gone through on that. to keep it out there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Change oil because it's cheaper than trying to get, you know, like I said, to get an axe like that or whatever, to swap that out. It's going to take us time. That's easier than just change the oil.
Yeah, and surely in Saudi Arabia, all manner of oil's got to be cheap, I would have thought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope so.
yeah, the diesel, I can't remember how much it is, but we had cash. They put cash in all of it in the vehicles. So you got, you know, so you can just stop and get fuel. But the thing out there is, Matt, is that you've got to find a petrol station or diesel station which sells diesel. Because they don't all do it. They might just sell petrol.
Oh, you know? And okay.
I couldn't believe that, you know, in Saudi, and you're looking about really for a, you know,
trying to find somewhere selling diesel.
Yeah. And this trippy thing that did tell you when I worked out sort of thing, but yeah, that's not uncommon, and we come across it where they just sell petrol. They don't sell diesel.
Wow.
And they're all pretty, I think I only saw one nice petrol station.
There.
You know, you get in the cities, then they're all clean. Everything is polished LED lights, but you get a mile out of the city and you're in Saudi Arabia.
Back to the 70, real Saudi, just a pump and maybe even a bit of shade if you're lucky.
Yeah. And that is literally what that can be like. There's a guy there who's going to, he's going to fill you up and he wants £1 in cash and then he wants a tip. So they used to give us, we'd get our packed lunch sort of thing. We'd pick up some bits, you know, to take with us for our journey through the day. We used to have, what would they give us? They give us tins of tuna. And I thought, Matt, who the hell is going to open that up? Nobody's opened up any vehicle. Do you know what I mean? We're going to do it. I decided that a good tip, because they wanted the cash back, what we had spent and the receipts for everything, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, a good tip for that bloke is I'll give him the tuna.
Yeah.
So I'd give him two or three tins of tuna for a tip.
Yeah.
And
excellent.
They seemed to like it. They put on the diesel pump and they were very happy.
Brilliant.
So they had something, didn't they? And, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, that did amaze me how rough, you know, that can be, you know.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, so how long did it take in total? So you're out there for a month, but how long was the actual rally?
That was about 3.5 weeks.
3.5. Wow.
And sort of moving about.
Full on. Proper full on.
Yeah, and that is, I think it's in Saudi Arabia until 2030.
Right, okay.
They'll be doing it there.
Yeah.
Unless, I don't know, these wars... how these wars go on over there, but obviously they're all near there. So I would imagine, well, let's say they've released the maps, the route and everything is released for next year, you know, for the rally. So
Fair enough. Will you be going back?
I haven't been asked yet, but I don't know whether my boss is racing. You know, he's just been down to Goodwood.
Yeah.
You know, they've got
a Festival of Speed.
They've been there with an old Merc car, him and
lovely
co-pilot, Gillet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. I think Roland says every year he does it. He says he's done 22, 23 old Dakars, so he knows what he's doing. He says, definitely. I think every year that I think it's my last one.
It's one of them.
But then it always turns out he does. I think after you finish it, you think, I don't know whether I want to do that again. But then give it a month when you're a bit more, when you're rested, you do.
You've forgotten how hard it is.
It's amazing how you get into it. Like I say, I was really chuffed to have that opportunity, you know, given that opportunity by him to actually go and do something which I don't know how anybody would get to be on them teams, you know.
And
they're all qualified mechanics and experts on everything, and they allowed me in there to be me and help them.
And have a go.
And I was really chuffed because they did say that I I did work hard. They said
that's good.
That was nice because my boss's wife came. They turned up a day before the end.
Yeah,
when we were back in Yanbu, and Anne was round the pits asking them, how did Stack do? Was he okay? Yeah. Did he help? Yeah. That's like you, Anne, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was chuffed that they all said, we all, and I have my lingo. If I'm in a foreign country, I make up what I think works and tango, painful, you know, and they're all going, 10-4. They're going, 10-4, because they're all foreign guys, aren't they? They're all from all around the world.
Yeah.
In these, so me being fluent in every language.
Yeah.
But I'll make it work, you know.
Absolutely.
Work. I'll make up my own language.
Brilliant. Like the international truck drivers who meant many years ago, a bit of pidgin English and pidgin European, get you through. Absolutely.
CB talk.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely. So if you were asked to go again, would you go back and do it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like a shot.
Yeah, I would. Even though it was, I would say it probably would it be the hardest? That was hard anyway.
I can imagine. Yeah,
I think most time. I think in the first 3 days, I had 6 hours sleep.
Flipping
you
egg.
Know what I mean? Because the team, you've got to be
home.
And how crazy that is when they finish and. Ronan finished 22nd, you know, and the zoo, I think they were about fifth or sixth, you know, so that which is an achievement. That's such an achievement to actually just finish that race, you know.
By itself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That is such an achievement because, you know, how everything is hammered and, you know, that is the thing is to just do it. So I was like, you can see the release on people when that car comes up on the podium and you go up there because you're part of the team and they let it go on the vehicle, you know, they're all slapping on the bonnet and the roof and, you know, everybody's happy.
Yeah.
But if you're in a Muslim country, you can't drink.
Yeah. You can't properly celebrate then.
No,
definitely not.
But, you know,
A few Diet Cokes.
That's it, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can see the passion in people who do it and the other truck drivers, you know, the guy I met at Chi-Chi, Alice Bass, he lives and he's got a transporter, which he does the rallies all through the year. He transports the cars to anywhere. They go to China. Anywhere, all over the world, Portugal, they're running down there all year. That's what he does. And this Dakar one, he's like me. He's on an airplane. We're going to Saudi. He picks up his truck because they're shipped round. Yeah. Obviously, and we pick them up from the docks to take them to the camp. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're all really, let's say, really good guys. They ain't just driving. That's the thing. You aren't just a driver. You have to, like I say, I spent most of my time getting wheels and tires.
Making yourself busy.
MA trucks, you just have to. Everybody, you know, you mix, you pitch in whatever anybody wants to do, you just do it.
Yeah.
You know, I even got me making bits in the end for some of the cars because they get short on things, guards. The stuff underneath.
Yeah.
You saw that out for me because we'll use a bit of that one to make that one to get that to work. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Bloody plane in the desert.
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, just what an experience. It's just, absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, absolutely amazing.
I think there's no, I don't know. You know, how you would get on them teams or to do, especially, I mean, I say, well, we're all wonderful people, aren't we? You know, but my skill set, I know about engines and things like that and can work on them, but I'm just a hillbilly lorry driver, do you know what I mean? And to be given that opportunity is like,
Just once in a lifetime, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. So pleased. And like I say, really thank you to them. I couldn't thank them enough. That's wonderful, wonderful people. And that man had raced all day long, get out of his car after 8 or 9 hours racing and go, all right, Zach, how are you? Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
Brilliant.
Humble. Amazing.
Down to earth people.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I'm all right. I haven't been racing down.
My feelings rattled out.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. What an opportunity. Amazing.
With everything else, that's all pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. That's brilliant. Well, I think I've taken up enough of your time, Zach, but I've absolutely loved hearing about it. That's been absolutely brilliant. And we'll perhaps, if you get another opportunity to go, we'll have to have another chat after the next one, perhaps.
Thanks for having a chat. Both enjoyable.
Really enjoyed it, mate. So we shall speak again soon.
All right then, Matt. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, mate.
Bye. Thank you.